You're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, just here to let you know that this episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In December, the Vermont Supreme Court handed down a decision in the case of two Vermont women in a long-term relationship that included raising an adopted daughter. The couple decided to adopt a second child, but without a civil union or marriage, only one of the women was legally recognized as the parent. When their relationship ended, the two women agreed to share custody of the children. But that agreement eventually broke down, and the non-legally acknowledged mother's fight for recognition as the children's parent went all the way to the state Supreme Court. In what was seen as a victory for her, the Supreme Court referred the case back down to the lower courts to figure out an acceptable custody arrangement. Shortly after the decision, we spoke with Vermont Law School professor Susan Apel about the case and the ongoing question of who gets to call themselves a parent.
I started teaching about these kinds of issues about 20 years ago, and there was really very little legislation. And at the time, I said, I thought that was because legislatures had been kind of caught unaware of all of these technological changes and weren't keeping up with formations of families in new ways. But certainly, it's been around now for a while, and there are some states that have legislated. There are a lot of states that have chosen not to legislate, and I'm not sure exactly why not. I think it's presents some difficult legal issues and also maybe some difficult political issues. It seems as though getting legislation has been problematic.
That was Vermont Law School professor Susan Apel in December discussing the need for and perhaps reluctance by legislatures to pass parentage laws. But Vermont is poised to update its current laws on the subject of parentage for the first time since 1984. And that's what we're going to discuss today. Last week, the Vermont House passed a bill that incorporates changing family structures, assisted reproduction, and de facto parenting. The bill is now in the hands of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Joining us today to look at what might change are three guests with expertise on these issues. Attorney Susan Murray was a member of the study committee that spent months trying to figure out the complicated legal questions surrounding parentage. De facto parenting is her area of expertise, and we'll explain more about what that means exactly in just a minute. Attorney Kurt Hughes was also a member of that parentage study committee. Surrogacy and assisted fertility are his areas of expertise. And Martin Lalonde is a state representative from South Burlington. As a member of the House Judiciary Committee, he spent time with the bill the study committee handed over, and he can talk about how the House views this, as well as the changes they've made. Welcome to all three of you. I'm thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. Good morning.
So if the aim of the original law on parentage that was updated last in 1984 was really aimed at trying to be able to recover money in custody arrangements, you know, to get child support, how would you say you've reframed the idea of parentage in the modern era and in the modern bill? Susan, I'll start with you.
Well, when that original law was passed, it was really focused on child support, as you say, and it was at a time when most children were born to a husband and a wife in a marriage. And since that time, the 30 years since then, we've had same-sex couples have children. We've had many people have children outside of the marital relationship. And we have people who are struggling to have children biologically, so they use assisted reproductive technology, fertility clinics, et cetera. And so there's many more ways that people have and form families today than that didn't exist back when the Vermont legislature last looked at the parentage laws.
So is the aim now to be able to recoup child support from more kinds of people, or are you thinking of parentage and the way Vermont's laws frame it as a different kind of idea on what we're trying to say with our parentage laws?
What we've run into in the court system and the Supreme Court in Vermont, as well as the trial court judges, are desperate for the legislature to tell them who is a parent. That's all this bill does. We already have laws on the books that talk about who gets, quote, custody and who has to pay, quote, child support. for these children, what the schedule is, which parent has the child when. This is just a gatekeeper question about who gets to be the parent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And throughout the study committee basically wrote a bill and said, here, legislature, this is what we think the bill should be, because not only were you doing all this work, but it gets very complicated to write a bill. And so it looks like what you were saying was, here's our best effort at what might be a good idea for a bill for the Vermont legislature. And throughout it, you talk about in the report this idea of the best interest of the child, that what you're looking for is what's in the best interest of the child. And so the parenting relationship as it relates to an actual child, because that's what we're talking about. And you know, Kurt Hughes, obviously that gets squishy. That's exactly what the Supreme Court has been asking the legislature to talk about, not just the best interest of the child, but then who gets to be a parent, who is in the best interest of the child, and how do we define that? How did you even get started trying to figure that out when, as Susan Murray says, there are so many different ways that people can parent a child now?
Well, we had a lot of guidance from Supreme Court decisions over the last 10, 20 years, actually, where the Supreme Court has been begging for legislative action. I think the only thing that they forgot is that the legislature doesn't sit around reading Supreme Court decisions. So fortunately, Justice Dooley came and spoke with the legislature, and Representative Grad was very interested in this process. And so it started last fall with the formation of the study committee. We also had guidance from the Uniform Parentage Act, which was just updated in 2017 after 15 years of not being updated. And our neighboring states of New Hampshire and Maine have also passed statutes recently. So we did have a lot of guidance to help us get started on the project.
Representative Lalonde, I mean, Justice Dooley is among the Supreme Court justices who've really been crying out for this for many years, 20 years, and saying, we're behind the curve. We need to fix this. You know, Kurt Hughes mentioned that legislators don't have time to sit around reading every Supreme Court case, also, you don't have all the time in the world to be doing studies on things like what are parents and who are parents. And so is this something that you welcome, this idea of changing our parentage laws in Vermont?
Oh, absolutely. And it is interesting that the Supreme Court has been asking for this for quite some time. This is only my fourth year in the legislature, and it was news to me when Justice Dooley did arrive to urge us. And once we understood that, I think we took fairly quick action. But we also quickly knew this was a very complicated subject, and we needed to have help from expertise, such as Susan and Kurt. The committee that we established last year also included representatives from the Office of Child Support, Department of Family and Children, Children and Family, that is, and a judge. So we did have them help us. And this was a great way to have a committee work, because they did come up with a bill fashioned off of the Uniform Parentage Act and also the Maine law that followed the Uniform Parentage Act. We received that bill last fall. It went to our legislative council, who really worked very hard on that to put it into the way that we have laws in Vermont. And then in January, we took this up, and it was very timely because it's a bill that we see in the judiciary and in the House as one that is strengthening families. And that has been a focus this year, well, this session, this biennium of the House, and issues such as paid family and medical leave, looking at addressing trauma in children, also affordable and quality early child care. These all go together, and this is one aspect of it, is to help strengthen our families. So we were very encouraged by the bill that we received, the draft. We took testimony on it. We made some changes, not significant, some protective changes, some clarifications. And
particularly on domestic violence, right?
That's correct. That was really a focus. We really pressed Susan and Kurt on de facto parentage and did our due diligence on all the other aspects of the bill. In the end, we did not need to modify those very much, except with respect to consideration of domestic violence situations.
I want to get into what this new bill does. And again, this is a bill that has passed the House. It's in the Senate. It is not Vermont law yet, and it remains to be seen whether it will pass the Senate in the same form or at all, although it looks like it has, if not smooth sailing, a pretty rosy picture in the Senate as well. Before we get into some of these situations, I just want to clarify what the Vermont law states currently about parentage. And Susan Murray, is there, like, I know it's, could you just give us a broad overview of how that works so that we can then talk about how it's changing?
Sure. The bill that our committee presented to the legislature was, I believe, 58 pages long. The law as it currently exists in our laws now is about a half a page long. It really just deals with child support. So it contemplated people, children who were born in a marriage, and that's it.
So no same-sex parenting.
No.
And all right. So let's get into de facto parenting, because I think this is a phrase mm-hmm. that is not familiar to everyone, but it will be very familiar once people understand, you know, what we're talking about. And so we have two notes that came in mm-hmm. That kind of talk about this issue. So Lola writes, "My brother began dating a girl who was pregnant with someone else's child and was there when this girl gave birth. They raised this little girl together. She calls him dad and has no clue that he's not her biological father. Then my brother and the mother split when she was two. She lets my brother have her half the time, which is great. The little girl is now five, but I still worry that her mom will enter into another serious relationship with a man who is not approving of my brother being in the picture because he's not the biological father. Does my brother have any legal rights to maintain the father-daughter relationship? He would be a broken man without that little girl in his life, and she would be a lost little girl. They have an intensely special bond." And then I'll pair that with Charles, who says, "As a dad who had a child when not married to the mother, the existing statutes that do not give dads any legal standing by default in this unmarried situation should be part of this parentage law evolution. I've been present in my child's life since birth, yet the court gives me no default legal recognition." So it sounds like perhaps Charles is also not on the birth certificate as the father. So de facto parenting, when we talk about this idea, what is it, Susan?
It's a fancy Latin word, phrase for meaning in reality, okay? In reality, you are the parent. Both Lola and Charles have given perfect examples of what I refer to as de facto parenting. And this bill will change the rights of Lola's brother and Charles if it passes. Right now, if Lola, in this example from your listener, if Lola's brother's ex-girlfriend decides that she doesn't want him to see the child anymore, she has complete rights to do that. He has no rights to this child, to see this child, or no obligation to support this child. So what de facto parenting means is you have held yourself out as a parent for this child in a very consistent way, whether it be providing care for the child, supporting the child, living with the child, all of these sort of factors in which people would say, look on the ground and say, you are that child's parent. And so this bill would recognize that it is in the best interest of this child who has formed a bond with this dad, with this man, to have this man be declared the father of this child.
There would be criteria. You have to be able to prove that you have a relationship that includes this bond and includes financial support. And one of the criteria might be having lived with the child for a long time.
Right. The criteria is, it's a pretty high standard. It's a standard that in the legal world we call clear and convincing evidence. It's a very high standard. And it says you have to prove by this high standard that you have formed a permanent committed, you have a permanent committed parental role with this child, and that you lived with the child for a significant period of time, and that it is in the best interest of this child that you be declared the parent.
Representative Lalonde, one of the interesting things in this bill that is different from the way our laws have worked and currently work is this idea that a child could have more than two parents, because in the law as it was written, you really can't. So is that something that the legislature, that the House at least, worried about at all? Or does that seem, and it's not just in de facto parenting, it can also come up in reproductive technology issues, but did that seem like a hurdle or just a natural part of our life?
It actually did not seem to be a hurdle in the Judiciary Committee. And when we reached the floor with this bill, it wasn't an area that we had pushback. We made very clear the ramifications of this. And I think it goes to the fact that in Vermont, we have children who have no parents, and we have children who have just foster parents. And you know, the fact that there could be more loving relationships in a child's life is not a bad thing. And I think that it really did not present a problem. Having said that, from what I understand, it's fairly narrow circumstances when this would come up. It could be a situation such as you spoke of, where another father comes into that child's life and establishes long-term contact with that child and long-term bond, but already has a father that has broken up from the birth mother. That other father can get legal rights, and so there would be three parents in that situation. And then the next step is to sort out any kind of rights and responsibilities. As we said, this is just to give you the ticket to get into the courthouse door. Then you establish custody, visitation, and the like.
I wanted to ask about DCF, the Department for Children and Families, and foster families in the context of this particular situation, because often foster families, and particularly foster families who are hoping to adopt the child in their care, have a child for sometimes years while the legal situation is in limbo. Does the bill disqualify foster parents from claiming de facto parentage because they would be financially invested in that child? They may have lived with that child for perhaps several years. They often have formed strong bonds. But that could really tangle or continue to tangle a legal situation if foster parents could declare de facto parentage rights. Did you tackle that at all? Does any of it tackle?
Well, you know, it's there's a difference between someone being a foster parent and someone undertaking to be a permanent parent in a committed role for a child. I think we can all think of other roles that, you know, I am a great aunt to some of my relatives in my family, but no one would confuse me as being a parent to those children. So I think that's really
Many of the foster parents are hoping to be fully recognized legal parents of that child at some point.
Yes, but Susan makes a good point. It's the intention of permanency from the very beginning. And this came up in our discussions of the guardianship statutes as well. So guardianships for minors are by their definition are intended to be temporary arrangements. And we were concerned about interfering with those specific statutes in guardianship and Title 33 juvenile proceedings. So certainly is our intent that this statute would not interfere with those specific proceedings.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about what makes a parent legally and how the legislature is trying to bring state law in line with modern family and culture. We're talking today with two members of the committee that spent months looking at just how to do this, attorneys Kurt Hughes and Susan Murray, and with House member Martin Lalonde. He's on the House Judiciary Committee, which looked carefully at the proposed bill before sending it on to the full House. The bill is now in the Senate. And Representative Lalonde, you do expect it to pass the Senate?
Yeah, I have not heard that there's any barriers to it getting passed through the Senate.
So it sounds like this is something that the legislature is pleased to have and looking forward to passing because, like the Supreme Court, you believe that this is something that's overdue?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the other issues. And I'll read another email that we got, and then we can get into some of the reproductive technology issues as well. But Lisa wrote in to say, my wife and I have two children. When our daughter was born, we were living in New York State, and the federal government did not recognize our marriage. Despite my wife being on the birth certificate and us using a fertility clinic with an anonymous sperm donor, my wife was not recognized as a legal guardian until she adopted our daughter. We also now have a son. Again, we used a fertility clinic with an anonymous donor. My wife is on the birth certificate. Will this new legislation allow my wife full parental rights without having to go through the adoption? Our son was born in, and we currently live in Vermont. All right, so lots to parse in that situation. But as I said, I mean, these are real people's lives, and it does get complicated. And then when you're trying to figure out your legal rights and trying to think about the future, it's complicated and scary for so many families. Okay, so what about Lisa's situation?
So great news for Lisa and her spouse. Current law would require – well, I currently advise clients like Lisa and her spouse to – obtain an adoption for their children, even in the situation she's described where there's an anonymous sperm donor. But now, with this new bill, if it's passed, they will be able to sign an administrative form that the Department of Health will have that's called a voluntary acknowledgement of parentage. That will create that legal recognition between the non-biological parent, the non-biological mother in this case, and the child, without having to go through the expense and the time and, frankly, the demeaning nature of going to through the adoption process when you're already married and already have a child together.
And that voluntary admission of parentage?
Voluntary acknowledgement.
Acknowledgement. Right. And that stands up in court. That's a legal document.
So right now, the only people who can sign, we do have that document now under the current law. It's only can be signed by the two parents who are biologically related to this child. So that leaves out all kinds of parents out there, including this couple that you just described.
Or including a couple that we heard about before. So when Lola was talking about her brother, whose girlfriend biologically had a child with another man, but he was there for the birth, he's raised this child, he perhaps could sign, if in this situation in the future, a voluntary acknowledgement of parentage and be considered a legal parent.
Exactly.
So why is it complicated, Kurt Hughes, when it comes to reproductive technology? Because that is one area where it seems like there are a lot of legal documents that people often have to sign before they even start the process. So why is updating our parentage laws to include reproductive technology important?
Well, as with de facto parentage, people have been living this way and forming families through reproductive technology for a long time. I've been practicing in this area for more than 20 years now. The thing that's been missing under Vermont law is the ability to get a court order of parentage for the parents, and they may or may not be the biological parent. So we have gestational carriers who carry a child that is not genetically related to her. The intended parents, the people that intend to raise the child, but one or both of them may be the biological parent. But what we've lacked in Vermont is the ability to get a court order of parentage. And that's so important because the one thing that every state in the union is required to recognize from other jurisdictions is a court order under our Constitution and the Full Faith and Credit Clause. So Vermont has been behind our neighboring states, Maine and New Hampshire. Maine just passed theirs in 2016. Massachusetts has created the ability to get court orders by way of case law, but they don't have a statute yet either. They're working on that, so we're ahead of them. What I have actually seen is clients going to other jurisdictions because they've been unable to get court orders. So what happens in Vermont in surrogacy cases is we are able to amend the birth certificate so that the intended parents can go on the birth certificate, but they don't have a legal order of parentage. So if there were a challenge to the parentage of one or the other, it's possible that they could run into legal problems and risk the ability to parent the child and the child being at legal risk of having the family broken up. So this is a huge step forward for Vermont, and we're very excited about it.
Would this law allow, say, a sperm donor who was donating sperm to a same-sex couple, and then they wanted to parent together as three people who are parenting together? Does the law allow for that kind of situation now?
Well, I think, you know, we brought up the situation of possibly having more than two parents on it, and I think that's exactly the kind of situation that would be perfect under the bill. And I think Representative Lalonde is correct. I don't think that situation is going to come up very frequently, but the fact that the statute gives the courts the flexibility to have those types of family formations when it's appropriate and in the best interests of the child is a fantastic addition to the law.
Jane, I can give you an example of when that fairly rare situation would occur. It was a same-sex couple. A man and a lesbian decided they would have a baby together. They both loved children. They had a baby together. The man was in the picture, but not. They were not living together, but caring for this child as a father. And then the woman fell in love with another woman. And all three of them got along really well, and all three of those people were taking care of this child. And then it turns out that the child had some sort of medical issue, medical condition that required a very expensive surgery to fix. The only person of those three adults who had medical insurance that would be helpful for this child was the non-biological female partner. And she was the only one that didn't have a relationship with this child legally. So that was a perfect situation where it would be clearly in the best interest of this child for this child to have a third parent so that the child could get the medical attention she needed. And that happened. That's a real case.
And so it's not always when there's a dissolution of a relationship. Sometimes it's something like we need to make sure that this child can get on the health insurance of one of these parents.
Exactly.
Maggie is calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Maggie. Go right ahead.
Hi, I was wondering if your guest could speak to how this new law might affect polyamorous families, families where a child might have one or more biological parents in the household, but also have other adults living in the household with whom they share co-parenting responsibilities or for whom the child has a significant relationship.
Maggie, thanks for the call. Do any of the three of you have a sense of how that might work?
Well, again, to the extent that particular family unit can meet the standard of a clear and convincing showing that it is in the best interest of this child to have more than two parents, and that they're all three of those folks are in have had permanent committed parental roles vis-a-vis this child, then the court, this bill would allow the court to determine whether or not to recognize a third parent. Doesn't have to under this bill, but it has the ability to for the first time.
Kurt, I think it was you, although I can't remember now. So one of you said this doesn't delineate in each situation who is a parent. It just allows you to get in the front door of the courthouse and to have that kind of legal standing in the courthouse to then you still may need to have perhaps a protracted legal conversation about this, but it at least clears the way for these conversations to happen.
Exactly. What this bill does is allow a person to be recognized as a parent go to the family court and have custody and visitation determined under well-established statutes and case law under – it's our Title 15, which governs divorce situations and parentage actions for custody. So you're right. This bill just allows people to get a foot in the door, so to speak.
We got a note from Brenda who says, my LGBTQ community is very glad to have parentage defined in a way that respects relationships that are in the best interest of the child and preserves family in all the combinations possible. I look forward to swift passage by the Senate and a signature by the governor. It looks like the whole panel here also looks forward to that. We're getting some thumbs up on that, Susan.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the questions here are from the gay and lesbian community, and that's understandable because I represent a lot of those folks, and we've had such difficulty just getting in the door in a lot of these cases. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that this is a huge issue generally, that if I had to put percentages on it, I would say that the issues, parentage issues for same-sex couples is much smaller than the overall number out there that the court system is seeing on a daily basis and is crying out for a fix.
Well, you can see so many situations. We've heard some of them. Or, for example, a step-parenting situation where there are two biological parents who have dissolved their marriage or their relationship, and one of the other parents at least forms a relationship with someone else, and that step parent is very much a part of the child's life but is not legally tied to that child. And then if there's a dissolution of that relationship, that step parent has no legal standing despite what may have been many, many years of financial, emotional, and loving support of that child. So this would, for example, help that step parent have some legal standing in a situation like
that. Exactly. This bill is totally focused on the child, not the adults, but what is in the best interest of this particular child. If it's in the best interest of this child to recognize that step-parent, that's what this bill allows the courts to do.
Representative Lalonde, you mentioned that the legislature and the House in particular is very focused on strengthening families and strengthening the laws that help families succeed. You can imagine some people who might say, this doesn't sound like it's strengthening my view of family. It sounds like it's allowing other people who I don't believe should be parents to be parents. Have you gotten any of that as you've looked at this law?
Happily, we have not gotten that. I think that people recognize that children need the loving relationships, the caring relationships. And if it's not a traditional family, I think that's okay. And we have not had pushback on that. The one area we had pushback on, well, there's a couple. One was making sure that biological or genetic parents' rights were not being diluted. And this does not do that. It's more important, you know, than having the DNA contribution. It is what you do with that child. It is being a presence in that child's life. Certainly having the DNA connection allows you to be heard. But if you're an absentee parent, has not been around, has not established the right bonds, then it's critical that individual, just because they have the biological relationship, doesn't trump other caring relationships. The other point, just very quickly, is that we did look at protections in situations where somebody is being held out as a parent because of coercion or threats. In other words, an abuse situation, that they should not be able to establish parentage. And we have those protections in this bill as well.
Well, I look forward to seeing where this law goes. It, as I said, is in the Senate now. It has passed the House. So we'll see what happens in the Senate. And, you know, find it fascinating to talk with you about this, because it's always interesting to see how our laws both reflect our culture and shape our culture. And then when they haven't kept up, how difficult it is to sometimes shape laws that actually reflect the people who have to live under them. So I appreciate the time that you've taken today to talk to us about this bill that you've worked so hard on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane. Appreciate it.
Kurt Hughes is a partner at Murdoch, Hughes & Twarog, attorneys at law and member of the Parentage Study Committee. Susan Murray was also a member of the committee and is a partner at Langrock, Sperry & Wohl. And Martin Lalonde is a state representative from South Burlington.